Today I'm talking to Senthil Kumar Veliyudham. He is consultant orthopaedic surgeon specialising in treating hip problems.
Good afternoon, Lynn. Thank you for inviting me for this radio chat.
I want to begin by asking what might seem a very silly question, but one that might not be easy to answer. We're on the radio, of course, so we're going to have to do the best you can here. Where exactly is your hip joint?
That's a very good question. A lot of people, where they think the hip is not actually where the hip joint is.
Yeah, because I would point to the side of my leg, at the top of my leg.
That is commonly what people think, but that's not where it is. That is a hip region, but that is not exactly the hip joint. The best explanation I can give on a radio is when you lift your thigh up, you'll see the crease forms.
Yes.
Where the thigh meets the body. In the middle of the crease, if you put a finger, right behind there is the hip joint.
So when I've had pain in what I thought was my hip joint, when I've been running, jogging or whatever, and I think, oh no, I'm doing damage, I need to stop. At the side, what is that pain?
That's commonly, people know it as the bursitis area, but that's one of the bones on the top end of the femur. It's called a trochanter, and that's where you feel in your body, but that's not the hip joint.
So is that likely to be more muscular?
More muscular pain.
Yeah, than a problem with the bone.
Correct.
Okay. My granddaughter is 8, and she's doing the splits in all different directions. And I worry for her hips, like, oh my goodness, she's going to damage her hips. How mobile is a hip joint? When I try to do it, it's impossible. Is it the muscle and the tendons that's stopping my hip doing that?
In any joint, there is a range of movements in the hip. Some people have much more than average. Some people will have less than average range of movements in the joints, and especially the hip. There is an average range, and there is a group of patients with a very, very high-end range, and it's a group of patients which much generally a bit stiffer joints.
So is that what you're born with? Mm.
It's a physical development and how lax their muscles and ligaments are and the anatomy of their joint.
Which is why is it your best to start as a child, I guess?
Yes, yeah. For this sort of activities, obviously. Yes. And even in patients who are got a high-end range of movements as a child, as they grow, their joints will become stiffer and stiffer.
Oh, really?
That's another...
Even though they're carrying on with gymnastics?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
It can. They have to compare. I mean, when they compare with their age group, there'll still be more. But when they compare themselves with what they were doing when they were child, that would be a bit less.
And having been able to do it now as a child, does that mean she's always going to be able to do it as an adult? Or will she stiffen up?
Not necessarily. She'll be able to do everything what she's doing now.
Okay. I won't tell her that. She'll be so disappointed. do everyone's hips wear out? Is it inevitable?
Cartilage wearing out in a joint is a natural process, you can say. It's like hair going grey. It'll gradually happen. Some people earlier than the others. Generally, osteoarthritis in the joints will happen. Age-related wear and tear is the main reason for that. Some reach the level where it's symptomatic or gives them enough trouble to warrant any treatment. There may be occasional patients who have some arthritis but don't have much pain, or they don't have bad arthritis at all. It varies a lot from person to person.
So when you say wear and tear then, the great Terry Wogan, his theory was the more you use the body, the quicker it wears out. So his theory was sit in the sofa the whole time and just relax and don't worry about it. So running, doing exercise or certain sports, is that going to make things worse?
There has to be a balance. Sitting on the sofa is not good for the joints. Though wear and tear takes place if you overuse it with aging, exercise is important to maintain the nutrition of the cartilage. If you don't exercise enough, the cartilage and the bone don't get the enough mechanical stimulus and the nutrition. So it's important to do exercise, but there has to be a balance. I wouldn't say sitting on the sofa will reduce the risk of arthritis.
Oh, that's a shame. That's that theory gone. So what about diet, supplements, things you can take to help preserve your bone, especially your hip joint?
If you want to preserve any joint, especially the hip joint, the important thing is to do regular low-impact exercises. As I said, it's important to do the exercises to maintain the nutrition of the cartilage, to keep them healthy, so that when they are challenged, they can take more pressure, etc. So regular exercises is a key thing. And also maintaining your weight within healthy weight range is very important. If you weigh, say, 10 pounds more than your average weight, what it should be, then it puts 20 to 30 pounds pressure on your joint, even when you're doing activities like walking. Basically, 2 to 3 times the body weight is the amount of pressure that goes through your joint when you're just walking.
Mm. So if you're overweight and you decide to lose weight and you decide, oh, I'm going to go running, that's not a good thing to do.
Low impact exercises, diet modification, lifestyle changes are the key thing.
For osteoporosis, women are told they should do impacts. It helps to with the density of the bone and the strength of the bone. Is that true?
It's weight training. Impact means it's not running necessarily. Impact means walking, cycling, some sort of lightweight training, gentle squats. These are also impact exercises, which strengthens your muscle, indirectly strengthens your bone as well.
So pounding the pavements and taking up boxing probably isn't the thing I should do then.
It's not for everyone, okay. You can say.
And what about supplements?
There is no overwhelming evidence that any of these supplements slow down or cure the osteoarthritis or regenerate your joint cartilage. So it's not a prescription drug. But I've heard some of my patients say they felt better after taking glucosamine in the early stage of osteoarthritis, but later on the effect wore off and ended up having hip replacement. So if the patients feel good taking supplements, there is no harm in taking them, but there is no overwhelming evidence.
Okay.
The main thing to keep a healthy joint is to do low impact exercises, maintain healthy weight, good lifestyle, good healthy diet are the key facts.
Okay, I'll do that. What is the journey? I get a painful hip. How long do I leave it before I go and see my doctor?
If the hip pain is due to a major injury, then obviously it'll be difficult to walk, it'll be more painful. You may need an urgent attention, so either by attending the hospital or going to the GP. But commonly, if it is a slow onset pain, then you could try simple measures like resting from your usual stirrings activities, doing gentle exercises within pain limitations, and taking some simple painkillers. If the pain settles down with it, then we can gradually get back to your routine activities as before. If the pain returns or if the pain doesn't respond to these simple measures, then you will need assessment by a GP, or there are other healthcare professionals who can also help, such as the physiotherapists, osteopaths, etc., who will be able to assess and treat the simple problems. And if they feel you need further intervention, they will suggest accordingly.
So your hip joint, is that where you would feel the pain typically?
The hip joint pain can vary from person to person. Typically, the patients would put their hand like a C shape around the hip.
Mm-hmm.
We call it as a C sign. That's where the classical pain is. The second, the other common area is in the groin. The pain felt in the groin sometimes radiate along the inner aspect of the thigh. Or pain can be felt on the outer aspect, the trochanter area, and then come down the leg sometimes. Occasionally it can be felt in just in the buttock area. Very, very rarely, the patients may feel the pain just in the knee, coming from the hip joint. That's very, very unusual, but can happen. When the simple non-operative measures fail, and the patients decide that then they would like to consider hip replacement, that's when I get to see them. And if it's established the patients have quite advanced osteoarthritis, then I discuss the treatment options with them. I'd be starting with discussing the non-operative treatment measures and the operative treatment measures. There will be patients who might still be keen to continue with non-operative treatment measures and delay the hip replacement as long as possible. And others might be in a situation where they would need a hip replacement. And at this stage, I discuss the procedure, benefits, the risks, the lifetime expectancy of those processes, the activities they can return, etc. And once they understand the whole process, then we decide to go ahead with surgery or not. Hip replacement is probably the second most successful operative procedure. They say it's probably the best life-changing procedure after, say, like a cataract surgery. So the hip replacement is highly successful and very commonly done procedure. But it is a big procedure and patients will be anxious. But by the time they actually come for the hip replacement, they are pretty much given lots of information. Generally, there isn't much doubt in their mind when they come for the actual hip replacement.
Can you explain to me hip resurfacing? Because it's, you don't necessarily have to replace the hip. Is there a procedure where you can resurface the hip?
The resurfacing hip replacement is a type of hip replacement.
Okay.
Where the ball of the ball and socket joint is not sacrificed. The socket component is placed and the ball or the femoral component is placed on the top of the ball after reshaping it. So it is a type of hip replacement.
Okay. So what happens during surgery? You don't necessarily have to be unconscious for the operation.
Correct. At least in our region, majority of the patients have the hip replacement under spinal anesthesia, which is like an epidural.
See, and I would find that really scary.
Yes, there are some patients who are anxious about that idea. If the patients are really anxious, they can have some sedation during the surgery. But there is significantly high benefits of having this procedure done under spinal anesthesia. We know that it reduces the blood loss, which is very beneficial for the patient. The pain after surgery is much, much less. They don't have the side effects of the general anesthesia, so they are much alert and comfortable sitting in a bed. Nothing more pleasing for me to see the patients up and about walking a few hours after the surgery or having their lunch or dinner, whatever, not feeling sick or drowsy, which commonly tends to happen with the general anesthetic medications. And there is some theoretical evidence that it might reduce the risk of deep vein thrombosis. There are significant benefits, advantages of having this procedure done under spinal anesthesia.
But from a patient's point of view, is there a sheet in the way so they can't see what's happening? You know, an operating theatre is quite a scary place.
Fortunately, they won't be able to see what's happening.
Good.
Having said that, I've had requests from a few patients whether they could see the operation.
They did? They wanted to watch?
Yes, they wanted to see the operation and they wanted me to give me a running commentary. I said,
no, that's crazy.
Both were not in their best interest.
How long does it take?
The actual operation takes about 45 minutes to an hour, but preparing one for surgery, including the anesthetic, takes about half an hour to 40 minutes.
And so can the patient wear earphones, listen to music, so they can't hear any noises?
Yes, if they choose not to have sedation, they can listen to music, or patients, they can chat with the anesthetist or the operating department practitioners who'll be around.
That's wonderful. That's really wonderful. So, okay, so you've had your operation, you're now sitting in bed and it's all gone well. How long generally are people in hospital?
So the patients will be walking anywhere between sort of 2 to 6 hours after the surgery. And with the enhanced recovery program developments, some of my patients go home on the same day.
Really?
That's called a day case hip replacement.
That's amazing.
Healthy patients can expect to go home the next day or day two. So usually if the patients are staying more than 2 days, it's commonly because of the social reasons or some simple medical complications, which obviously very uncommon, but can happen.
Afterwards, you must be in a lot of pain.
There will be some pain, but most of the time the patients feel it is much better than before surgery. And the surgical pain gets better very quickly. The painkillers available are good enough to control their pain very well and allow the patients to do exercises in the first few days. And after that, the pain should get better very quickly.
So when you're talking painkillers, if the patient is discharged on the same day, you must be going home with a packet full of drugs there, and you have to administer it yourself. I thought it would be intravenous, there'd be all sorts of pain management. But if you're going home that soon, how does that work?
That was used to happen, say, 20 years ago, but now with the better pain management, the better surgical technique, better anesthetic techniques, and early mobilization, which is also very important. The earlier the patients start mobilizing, the lesser the pain. All these things helps to control the pain so much that they don't have to have the sort of intravenous or intramuscular painkillers when they go home. All they need is oral painkillers and it'll be enough to control their pain.
So once you get home, what happens?
When the patients are ready to go home, they are walking with help of crutches and they'll be able to do stairs by then. And they'll be given lots of exercises to do. Information will be provided to them and they're expected to carry out those exercises. And do frequent short distance walking. Little often is the key. As the pain gets better, they'll be more and more mobile. Typically, they'll be expected to keep the crutches for 2 to 4 weeks. Sometimes it might vary. The surgeon and the physiotherapist will advise them accordingly. After 2 to 4 weeks, they'll come off the support and start walking without support by 6 weeks. This is average, general average. But as long as their symptoms are improving, they'll all be fine at the end.
And when would you say you'd be kind of back to normal? How long does it take generally?
So normal varies from person to person. A person who is generally keen just on walking to the shops, doing some gentle walks, they'll probably be able to do that by, say, 3 months. They'll be pretty much back to their activities doing those things. Those who are keen to return to sports, like playing golf, tennis, etc., it may take a bit longer to reach the level they would like to. The hip function continues to improve for 6 to 12 months, though the rapid recovery takes place the first 6 to 8 weeks. And there will be a gradual improvement in the hip function after that.
Mm.
And that's when they feel improvement every month in way of being able to do more activities, walk longer distance, do more stiffness exercises, and play sports.
So is it okay for someone who's had a hip replacement to take on more impact sports, such as, you know, running, even tennis? You mentioned tennis. Is that okay with a hip replacement?
Yes. What level of activities they return to depends upon what they were doing before. They can return to those sort of sports activities. Low impact exercises are absolutely fine. Cycling, swimming. People can return to skiing. Running, before there was always worry whether the patients would wear out their artificial joint by running. There is no real evidence, so I leave it to the patient's choice. If they feel they can run and they want to run short distances, that's absolutely fine. But I generally advise them to wait, depending upon the type of hip replacement, anywhere between 4 to 9 months before they start running, because it's a high impact exercise. There is no real evidence that it wears out the artificial prosthesis quicker than otherwise. With the improvement of the technology, the bearing surfaces which we use, they can last much longer. They're hard bearing surfaces, so they can last.
How long do they last?
The hip replacements typically last about 15 to 20 years in more than 90% of the people.
How many times can you have a new hip?
These are the figures based on the prosthesis obviously used 20, 30 years ago. But with the current in a prosthesis, the bearing surfaces, we think they can last a bit longer. But yes, the patients can have revision surgery. Commonly, the young patients who ask these questions, because they are obviously worried about the revision surgery in their lifetime. The revision surgery can be done as many times as necessary, as long as their bone and muscles are in good condition and their general health is in good condition.
Okay, that's good.
I hope it's a one-off operation.
Yes,
at last
I'm sure they do too.
Lifetime.
Yes. Yes, I think I don't know whether I heard a fact years ago or whether I dreamt it, but it was that you could only have two. Two was this, and then you'd had your last.
No, that is not correct.
True.
That is
okay.
Not correct. Patients, after having had 3-4 revision operations, they've come to me and for another revision surgery.
Mm.
And as I said, it depends upon their general health, their bone quality, and of course, whether they need doing. Yes.
So technology for the procedure itself, I know for knee replacement, they do that now with robotics. Is there a similar technology for hip surgery?
Yes. Robotics or computer-assisted surgery is developing very fast in many surgical specialties and definitely in orthopedics. The robotic hip replacement or computer-assisted hip replacement in the knees or the hips is still in an evolutionary stage. What it does, it minimizes the variations from the predetermined planning of the procedure. So it helps the surgeon to place the components where exactly they had planned to do. It does reduces some of the risks. It helps achieve accurate leg length, some component position, which should reduce the risks of the surgery. Results of hip replacement, even without computer-assisted surgery or robotic surgery, is so good, so high, that we need to have much more robust studies looking at the large volume patients and for a very long time to show that they are significantly better in reducing the complication rate, etc.
What other technology do you have?
The technology, it has allowed us to prepare the patients better for surgery. I can definitely say the patients nowadays are much more well prepared for a hip replacement compared to patients 20 years ago. That's a result of technology.
What sort of technology prepares a patient?
Lots of manuals prepared, the video,
the information.
Patients has been given, selecting the appropriate patients, identifying the risk factors, minimizing those risk factors to improve the results, etc. All these things are a result of the various research and the technology that's improved in the last few decades. The other improvements in the technology or have allowed us to do minimally invasive surgery, the better understanding of the anatomy, better implants, and the instrumentation allows us to do surgery through very minimal dissection of the soft tissue, no muscle cutting.
Yes, how big would the scar be? Does it depend?
It depends, but average is around 4 inches, but can be up to 6 inches. The size of the incision alone is not important. What is important is how well the ligaments and the capsules
dental operation repaired, how well the soft tissues have been handled. They are important. Equally or more important are how well the prostheses have been fixed in the bone, whether the patient's anatomy has been recreated in all three planes, and the good prostheses with long-term records have been used. All these things are equally or more important than the size of the incision to achieve good short-term and long-term results.
Improvement in the technology has allowed us to design the prostheses that will match the femur and the socket anatomy better. Improvement in the technology has improved the longevity of the hip replacement because they are hard-wearing surfaces, so they can last much, much longer, plus the robotic surgery.
The hip joint itself, the prosthesis, are there different types?
So the hip replacement you can broadly classify as sort of resurfacing hip replacement or a total hip replacement. The total hip replacement is the most commonly done conventional total hip replacement. There are some classification based on the way they are being fixed to the bone, the cemented hip replacement or uncemented hip replacement, and the bearing surfaces, whether they have ceramic bearing surfaces or ceramic on plastic bearing surfaces or metal on plastic bearing surfaces.
And how do you make a decision on which you should use?
Each bearing surface has its own advantage and disadvantage. So the surgeon will have to decide based on the patient and decide to choose
their lifestyle, their age.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. And it's the surgeon's decision, not the patient's decision. They can't go and have a little look at all the different ones. Oh, yes, I quite like the look of that one.
It is not always the patient's decision. I would put it as mutual decision between the surgeon and the patient.
Because I'll have an Andy Murray one, thank you.
I'll come to the Andy Murray hip for you in a minute. The prosthesis is selection based on the surgeon's experience to the best advantage of the patient. And the bearing surfaces, again, no one bearing surface is the perfect. There are advantages and disadvantages. So it's better that the surgeon decides based on their discussion with their patient.
So you said you're going to talk about Andy Murray.
Yeah, the hip resurfacing hip replacement is a metal on metal bearing hip replacement. So it is not done in women nowadays because there was a higher incidence of failure in women. So in United Kingdom, it is not being done at the moment.
Okay.
The reasons for high rates of failure being maybe some genetic predisposition or smaller bearing surfaces. We do not know exactly why. But the joint registry showed higher rate of failure, so it's not done. So it's only done in young men who are very keen on competitive sports, etc. Mm. But there is another, again, technology is improving. They are trying ceramic on ceramic resurfacing hip replacement. The early results seems to be good. But in orthopedics, we have to wait for the long-term results to make sure they are successful enough to be used widely. So time will tell.
Moving ahead all the time, not only with the prosthetic procedure, things are always changing, aren't they? Bringing in the new developments.
Yes.
It's exciting, isn't it?
A human being human being,
exactly.
We always want to excel ourselves. So yeah. If you're doing 95% better, then we ask why we are not 99% better.
Yeah.
Then we'll try to achieve 100% results.
Yeah.
In human nature, and the evolution will continue.
Yeah. Sadly, we're out of time. We've talked for ages. Senthil Kumar Veliyudam, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Before we say goodbye, I'm sure our listeners will need to know and want to know where they could see you.
My NHS practice is mainly based at Tunbridge Wells Hospital, Pembury. My private practice based at Nuffield Hospital in Tunbridge Wells and the Hoder Centre, Crowborough, where I also see some occasional NHS patients here.
And if people want to read about you, go to the Hoder Centre website. You don't have your own website yet, I know.
It's a work in progress. It's work in progress, hopefully in the next few months.
Brilliant. Once again, Mr. Veliyudam, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm pleased to say that since recording this interview, Mr. Veliyudam does now have a website, and it's excellent. Visit hipsurgeryclinic.co.uk.